Stop putting everything in your name. Create a business, an LLC. Put everything in your LLC. And open up a C Corp. If you don't know, they just need to figure these out. I'm telling you the names. Get a C Corp to run an LLC. If you want to make it even deeper, go get a trust fund and run a corp that runs the LLC. You want to get even deeper, own two trust funds for your business and your person to run that trust that runs all the business. It can get deep, man.
Waka Flocka just gave you some golden nuggets. He says, stop putting your name on everything. Why do you think the wealthy owns nothing or controls everything? My name.
That's deep.
We're opening C Corps, trusts, LLCs. Yep. That's a lot. I mean, why stop there? Let's open 20.
It's just going to be a business inside of a business inside of a business.
Keep layering it.
Yeah.
Keep stacking bricks on top. I mean, Waka Flocka, I see where he's trying to come from here, of maybe getting your personal name off of something. But all
just
of
like
this,
liability protection, right?
Like, is that what maybe he's that's what at? He's thinking? And I think the guy at the end's maybe saying that, like, hey, they control everything but own nothing. That's not really true.
The definition of wealthy is that you own a lot of assets.
Yeah, and a lot of trust people.
Whether through
people
an entity or direct under your name.
Yeah, you still own that. Like, you if you open up a trust in your name, if it's a revocable trust, which most people open those, like, you still own it.
Yeah.
You still have access to it. It's yours. Most of these. And the C Corp, I don't know. Open that up if you actually have a business that requires a C Corp, and that makes sense for taxes and for growing your business. But to just throw out on a radio show, open up C Corps and have that run, have a trust run your C Corp and your LLC.
I mean, because an LLC is a pass-through entity, just like an S Corp is a pass-through entity, and it's actually a very tax-efficient vehicle. When you start opening up a C Corp, that signals that you're probably trying to raise capital of some
kind. Yeah, you're trying to get more than 100 outside investors probably. You maybe want to go public.
Go public, and it's not tax-efficient at all.
No.
No, because you've got to pay taxes at the business level, because it's not the pass-through entity like an LLC is or an S Corp is. And then, whenever you want to pay dividends to yourself, that's another tax rate that you got to pay.
Yeah, and if you hold too much cash in a C Corp, you're going to be taxed on that.
Yes.
Like, it's just not the most tax-efficient thing to do, unless it really makes sense for your business. He's just making stuff up right now.
Unless you're required to, basically. I mean, you don't need these really complex layers.
Maybe don't take financial advice from Waka Flocka on TikTok. See where he's getting at.
Yeah.
Here's how to become one of the wealthiest families in America. First, set up a trust. Then buy a permanent life insurance policy. Make the trust the beneficiary so that your trust can become your family vault. Your trustees are the bank tellers that give out loans to your family when needed and charge interest until it's paid back. This will allow the family vault to support your family for generations to come without getting depleted. It's what the Rockefellers do. If it works for them, it can work for you.
Okay, what did you think of that one?
I think she's missing a very important step there. I mean, if you're going to go through all of this and trying to put all of your personal assets in an irrevocable trust, which is what she's referring to, first have to have money.
Step one.
Make a lot of money. Opening up an irrevocable trust is not going to make you rich.
Yeah, over 50% of Americans earn under $75,000 a year as a household. If you all of a sudden do this and you open up a trust and get a life insurance policy, that will not create wealth for you. You need to have wealth in order to do this. And she mentions the Rockefellers again. I feel like every week we see stuff talking about the Rockefellers. What makes sense for them as billionaires probably doesn't make sense for the average American to do. They got their wealth from having basically a monopoly on the energy and oil business.
And then the government forced them to break it up, Standard Oil, and it actually made them richer.
They did not get their wealth because they opened up a trust. You can go open up a trust right now. It will not impact your net worth $1. So while there is some reasoning to this, if you become a billionaire, this can definitely make sense for estate tax purposes and basically protecting heirs and making sure your wishes are met.
I mean, I think maybe we should spend a little bit of time kind of talking through that. What she's kind of referring to and what the Rockefellers did is they set up an irrevocable trust in order to pass assets from one generation to the next in a tax-efficient manner.
And that they can control basically upon death of John D. Rockefeller. He can be in control still of this is how I want the assets distributed. Yes. Don't just give all this money to the heirs. What if somebody's 17 or what if somebody's 25 and you're worried they're going to screw it up? There can be restrictions, and the trustee, who she said is kind of like the people at the bank distributing money, they take over for John D. Rockefeller or whoever is that next generation. And they're the ones that help control, oh, you need money? Okay, we're going to make sure this makes sense and you're not going to do something ridiculous with it. Because most of the time, wealth is squandered within three generations. It's basically over 90% of wealth is gone in three generations. The Rockefellers are a unique family that happened to make it for multiple generations, and they clearly set up things well, which is why people want to copy it, but you are not copying what got them to become a billionaire. You're just copying what they did when they were a billionaire.
Need to corner the oil market or something like it.
Do that. That's what's going to... So that's, I think, what's tough is that it's good viral video, right? It's an easy way to talk about it, but doing this will have zero impact on your wealth.
So I went on Forbes.com and I was like, hey, last year, who made the most amount of money? And I think the top two or three people were hedge fund managers. And I was like, hey, what is a hedge fund manager, right? I have no idea. So I look at a hedge fund manager and like going down the rabbit hole, I was like, oh, wow, these are people that kind of manage money for other people in the stock world. So I was like, okay, I want to get involved in the stocks. So I look it up and it's like, you know, you can open an account in 2 seconds, fund it and take on trades. So then I started looking at old trades. I'm like, wow, if I bought here and I sold here, I could have made this much money. And that's what essentially everyone does when they look at the markets, right? They're like, oh, if I bought here and this much, and I'm like, how hard can this be? So that's ultimately what got me into it.
Boy, those are the famous last words.
How hard can it be? It can be so hard.
I think maybe it's fair that every investor has started out down this path.
I think so.
I mean, any investor worth their salt has traded money and lost a lot of money before they learned, hey, maybe that's not the right way. It is a little bit more difficult than I thought.
Yeah, it's so easy looking back and going, oh, I should have just bought Tesla at this time. I knew Tesla was going to be big. Or like, why didn't I just buy Amazon?
I remember hearing about Bitcoin in 2013.
I thought about buying it. I should have. It's so hard. The vast majority of experts, we're talking funds that have thousands of analysts, they cannot outperform the market. So thinking, hey, one day I saw that the highest earners run hedge funds. I think I'll just do that. How hard can it be?
Is
a ridiculous statement.
It's a very simplified viewpoint to say, hey, look, all you have to do is just buy when it's low and then sell when it's high, and then you can make money off of that. I mean, not only do you have to pick the right investment to invest in, you also have to pick the right direction. Is it going to go up or is it going to go down? And not only that, you have to find your exit. So you have those three variables. And then you have to do it over and over and over and over again. And so it compounds on each other and not just let luck take over. Now you have to let skill take over because luck can't carry you that far. And you just quickly do the math and you can find out it's really, really difficult to outperform and do well over time.
Yeah, people commit their entire lives to studying one sector and they don't outperform just a simple market benchmark.
No.
So thinking I'm just going to watch a TikTok and say, you know what, I'm going to get into stock world. It's going to fail probably.
Yeah.
But the tricky part is, as you said, you cannot differentiate luck from skill. So when you see somebody, some people might end up having a good few years and they're like, hey, I know what I'm doing, not realizing it's pure random chance that company you bought, something happened 6 months later that caused the price to go up that was completely outside of your knowledge world.
Yeah. I mean, early on in my career, I worked for an investment bank, an equity analyst bank, where basically these analysts, they specify in one sector and they study it very well. And they're the guys who give the calls on a, you should buy this stock, you should hold it, or you should sell it.
Like you'll see them show up on CNBC, right? And be like, hey,
CNBC,
we think
you'll see, hey, like this stock has a buy rating or like NAD research or whatever. And so this analyst, they're very well compensated. And they sell their research to hedge fund managers or the buy side is what they call it. And this manager worked there for about 15, 20 years. And he told me as I was getting into the industry, he's like, look, I've been doing this for a long time. I've been right half of the time. I've been wrong half of the time. And I am the expert in my industry. And it would have been just better just to buy an index fund. And he's the expert in this industry. And he got it wrong half the time. Probably more than half the time.
Probably more.
If we're going to be fair.
Well, we've talked about it. He's not as well known as Warren Buffett, but Jim Simons runs a company called Rentec, Renaissance Technologies, and they have a fund called the Medallion Fund. It's the greatest performing fund ever. Mm-hmm. It's basically compounded over 66% on average a year for basically 30 years. It's wild.
Yeah.
Now, this is a team of mathematicians, code breakers, MIT professors, Harvard professors. These were like the Einsteins of their field. Some people are close to Nobel laureates. And when you look back, and there's a book written about them last year, they only won 51% of their trades. And they basically built a computer algorithm to run this for them. And these are the smartest people in the world, code breakers. They were code breakers for the Pentagon that started a fund. 51% of the trades they won. And they just used a lot of leverage. And it turned out to be the best performing fund ever. And it's closed. Only the owners of the company and like the family are part of it. So it's not open to outside investors. If that isn't proof enough that
it took that much brain power.
Yeah.
Just tilt the odds
to
barely
find
in their
the
favor.
Smallest inefficiency, which they can then leverage up to the hills
yeah.
to end up with a good performance. But even if they didn't apply leverage to it, it would just be a normal market return.
Yeah.
And it took them years to get there. They almost failed as a fund until they finally were able to be one of these once-in-a-generation anomalies that yeah. finds some little inefficiency in the market. So again, to think that we're just going to do it.
And then they just price that arbitrage out.
That's it. They make just small amounts on each trade.
So you can't replicate it.
Yeah.
It's gone.
And you're certainly not doing
money.
It.
Like, it's gone.
After your 9 to 5 and you go home and you read CNBC, yeah. like, that ain't you. You're yeah. not going to do that.
Buddy. This guy is not.
It's not me either. I'm not doing it.
Okay.
401k is the biggest scam in America. Why would a sensible person pay their taxes, not now, delay them, defer them for when you're ready to retire? You don't have anything to write off. You're paying higher taxes than ever. Do you think for them to keep Social Security, taxes are going up or down? Taxes are going up. It would make so much more sense to take your money,
like the
put it in a life insurance product that's like going to that allow you to make yeah. compound interest. But here's the key. Pay the taxes up front on the small seeds, not on a huge harvest in retirement.
Your 401k is not a scam. It's just an account type.
I feel like every month we come across something like this where it's a 401k is a great vehicle for driving wealth.
Yeah.
And you can get compound interest outside of insurance funds.
Every time you hear 401k scam, you know there's going to be a life insurance pitch coming at the end.
Yes.
It's
like the biggest competitor,
it's
I guess,
coming.
Right?
I don't know what's happened, but life insurance is everywhere now. These people are making some money off of TikTok these days. And you can defer yeah. your taxes in a 401k, or you can use the Roth and pay the taxes now. It's a personal choice, but it is crazy. And this tagline, you know, we broke it down, this tagline of you can pay tax on the seed or the harvest. It sounds yeah. like if I defer my tax, I'm going to have this tax bomb waiting for me in the future. And that's just not necessarily the case.
Because usually whenever you're working and you're in your prime earning years of your life, you're going to be in the highest tax bracket ever. And that's generally going to be somewhere between the ages of 30 to 60. And generally, whenever you start to withdraw money from your retirement account, your 401k, your rollover IRA, all that tax deferred money, you're not working. Chances are you're going to be in a lower tax bracket than when you were actually deferring those money.
You hear the reasonable fear of, hey, taxes could go up.
The opposite.
Taxes could go up,
and they might
go up, but oftentimes for certain people in certain tax brackets, it's going to be really hard to see how they're going to go up so much because there's so many other levers a government can pull to increase their revenue. An income tax.
I know, it's not just that.
Like,
being facetious, but
it's crazy. But yeah, it's crazy to think like this is yeah. the only lever they have. Like, oh, taxes are going to go up in the future. How are we going to pay for Social Security? Like,
yeah.
well, Social Security right now, for example, this person that would be retired, you don't pay that. You're going to pay Social Security tax on wages.
Yes.
So that's a completely ridiculous argument to start with. But we broke it down because this is really important for people to know. If you're in the same tax bracket today as in the future, whether you do a Roth and pay tax now or you do a traditional and pay tax later,
yeah.
you end up with the exact same amount
of money. The argument that he's trying to make here is you don't want to defer your income now. You'd rather pay the tax now, grow it, and then it'll be worth more versus if you were to do a tax deferral and then it's invested in its growth because you don't want to take money out. What we're saying is it's all relative. And I think that like the 401k is such a brilliant thing is because chances are you're going to be in a lower tax bracket. You don't know where tax rates are going to be in the future. They might be higher, they might be lower, but think of it as sort of like a diversification on your taxable buckets whenever you're retired. Not everything is going to be in this one tax bucket, whether it's after tax or pre-tax. It's good to have a diversification.
And I think too, general rules yeah. of thumb, people get it. Like, once again, we're seeing videos where they make these brash statements and they go viral. But if you're in, say, the 37% marginal bracket today and you're retiring in a few years, odds are you're going to be in a much lower bracket.
Yeah.
And you probably should defer taxes. Versus if you're young in your career and you're in the 10% bracket or 12%, yeah,
hey,
probably use the
Roth. Is good.
Pay the tax yeah. now. And there's a whole spectrum in the middle depending on your income yeah. and your goals and priorities. But to think people might
there's
be following
this.
There's
a silver lining in any situation.
And know? We're just kind of skipping over the ridiculous life insurance claim. I'm not
no,
ready to go down
I
that
think
again,
we just hammered on the 401k as a scam.
Hopefully people know that that's ridiculous and ignore that. Don't skip a 401k for a life insurance policy.
Actually, people fall for that. So,
they do.
Yeah.
They do.
Yeah, but don't do that. Thanks for watching. Again, my name is Ryan. This is Peter. And we run a financial advisory firm called Bull Oak Capital. If you want to learn more about how we help our clients achieve true financial independence, be sure to check out bulloakcapital.com.